This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Scott Greenberg. What if I told you that trillions of tiny particles are flying through your body right now, and you don't feel a thing? They're called neutrinos, and they're some of the most mysterious messengers in the universe. The only problem? They're almost impossible to catch, unless, of course, you build a detector the size of a cubic kilometer and bury it in the Antarctic. Today on Cool Science Radio, we're joined by physicist Vedant Basu and Karsten Rott from the University of Utah, who are helping lead the next chapter of the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory. We'll talk about chasing invisible particles, turning ice into a telescope, and what all of this can reveal about the wildest corners of the cosmos. Vedant, Karsten, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Good to be here. Thank you for having us.
What exactly is a neutrino, and why do physicists get so excited about something that barely interacts with anything? Karsten, you want to take that one?
Yes, I'll take that one. Yeah, so neutrinos are subatomic particles. They are similar to electrons, and they, as you mentioned, they fly through us every second. There are actually trillions of neutrinos that fly through your fingernail at this moment. And these particles can tell us a lot about the universe. So that's actually why physicists and why we care about neutrinos. We also know that neutrinos have fundamental properties that are quite different from what we expect from our basic understanding about the model or particle physics, and therefore they are also so interesting to study because they might lead us to new ways to understand the universe and how everything actually fits together.
All right, so I guess I'm still a little confused because I know about atoms, I know about electrons, and I know about protons, but again, is a neutrino part of an atom or is it something altogether of itself?
Yes, it's something altogether of itself. So it's a separate a subatomic particle. It's more similar to an electron. A proton is actually a composite particle that is made out of basically three fundamental particles, three quarks. And yeah, a neutrino is a purely or a pure fundamental particle. So you cannot divide it in any smaller pieces. Yeah.
Okay, so a neutrino is just a singular thing in and of itself, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And it's flying through my fingernails right now as we speak.
Yes.
I'm looking at my fingernails and I don't see them.
Yeah. That's not a surprise.
The Vedant, the ice cube detector, it's buried in Antarctic ice. Why put it there?
There are a couple of good reasons why we need to go somewhere as extreme as the South Pole. So one of the things is because neutrinos interact so rarely, it means that to see even one neutrino, you need like a very big detector so that like you have a really large number of them, which you may be able to see. So that's one thing. The way we detect neutrinos, we also need a large volume of very clear material, like optically transparent. So water is good, but ice is better. The ice at the South Pole is really, really clear because it's been compacted over like hundreds and thousands of years. And the last like big reason is honestly more like prosaic because the South Pole is actually it has logistical support for big science. They have an airstrip, they have like fuel and generators, they have dorms for like people to stay in. So it's actually like a very good base camp.
All right. So for our listeners who are picturing this observatory, I mean, when I think observatory, I think of this big domed thing with a telescope sticking out of it. You know, can you maybe explain what the ice cube actually looks like?
Sure. So actually ice cube at the surface looks a little less spectacular than a giant telescope. In fact, ice cube is simply like on the surface, there's just a sort of building with sort of two poles sticking out at either end, two towers at either end of it. Most of the magic happens below the surface, actually, about a mile below the surface. There are 5,000 tiny little, well, not tiny, they're about the size of a basketball, 5,000 detectors, like sort of strung into the ice in 86 holes. And it sort of looks like a Brussels sprout, like there's a cable running down and there's like these basketball sensors on them. We call them digital optical modules or DOMs. So that's kind of what Ice Cube looks like. And they go like a mile from, they start at a mile deep and they go to a mile and a half, wow, almost like all the way to the bedrock.
How do you get them down there?
That's what I was just doing at the South Pole this season. So we drill holes in the ice. It's actually very interesting because you can't really drill a hole to in like a mile and a half deep with just regular like metal drill bits, right? So what we do is we have what's called a hot water drill, which is basically a high pressure pump pumping hot water down, and that melts through the ice really efficiently.
I'm kind of envisioning this giant steam tube, if you will, penetrating mm-hmm. down through the ice to then, I guess, put these sensors in place.
Yeah.
Okay. So Karsten, what role is the University of Utah playing in all of this?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the University of Utah actually joined the Ice Cube experiment relatively recently in the last 5 years. So it's actually when I relocated to the University of Utah and build up a group here. And our primary responsibilities are actually coordinating the Ice Cube analysis that are going on. I mean, maybe stepping a bit back, the Ice Cube is actually run as part of an international collaboration where we have more than 50 institutions from around the world. And about 300 scientists working on this experiment. And yeah, we have Dennis Holden, who is actually who's a NASA faculty member here in our department, who is the analysis coordinator. So he coordinates all the analysis that are going on at these different institutions. And then, we are deeply involved in conducting experimental searches, so data analysis, looking for astrophysical neutrinos, looking for new phenomena like dark matter, and also we play a big role in the calibration of the detector. So what Bedant already mentioned, that we use this very clear Antarctic ice, and we actually try to measure the optical properties of the Antarctic ice, which we use as this detector medium for the neutrinos in new ways. And for this also, our group has built a new camera-based calibration systems where we actually take optical images in the ice and then use that to better understand how the light propagates through the ice, because that is essential to reconstructing the neutrinos and basically pointing them back to their sources.
Well, it's pretty cool. I gotta imagine. First of all, I'm imagining when you say ice cube, this is a cubic kilometer. That is massive in terms of a detection system. And I love the name Ice Cube, again referring to the cubic kilometer of ice. But what actually happens when a neutrino finally does interact with the ice? What's the signal you're looking for, and what do you hope to gain from that knowledge?
Yeah, so when a neutrino interacts, it basically produces a faint light flash, and this light that is being produced is actually Cherenkov light. You can think of it as when the neutrinos that we detect have relatively high energy, so they produce secondary particles, other particles that are moving basically with the speed of light through the ice. And whenever there's a charged relativistic or very fast particle moving through a medium like water or ice, Cherenkov light is being emitted. Cherenkov light is a very characteristic radiation. So it's basically like a faint blue light. And we are trying to detect this faint light with these optical sensor modules that Bedant described. So basically the ice of the detector. And based on the hit pattern that we are seeing in the detector, we can then point back where the neutrino came from. And you said basically to study their sources.
So this blue light is this referred to as the Cherenkov radiation?
Yes, that is correct. And Cherenkov radiation, you can basically understand as similar to when a speedboat moves over the surface of a lake, you kind of see this wake behind it. So Cherenkov light acts in a very similar way. So when a relativistic charge particle moves through a medium like water or ice, then a similar like this wake is created. And we have a very detailed understanding how this light is being emitted. And therefore, we can use that to precisely reconstruct the neutrino events.
That is a perfect description. Thank you for that. It's, at least in my mind, I can now kind of picture what it is that you're looking at and looking for. Vedant, back to you. Your recent work points to the next generation of IceCube. And I'm just curious, what's changing about that?
So there are a lot of things we're doing with the work we recently completed, one of which is, as Carsten mentioned, we want a better understanding of the ice we're actually using. So we want to better understand a more granular view of like the optical properties of the ice, like how much light does it absorb and stuff like that. And then we also want to understand so we're sort of taking a step away from neutrinos which come from deep space, and we're looking more at like neutrinos as fundamental particles. We're doing a lot of fundamental physics studies about the nature of neutrinos, irrespective of where they come from. Another aspect which I'm like, this is work which I'm personally very interested in, is for the upgrade, we created a lot of different kinds of optical sensors. We did a lot of instrumentation research. And this is sort of leading towards future expansions of IceCube, where we can go to even higher energies.
Well, what questions are you looking to ask in the future that you're not getting answers to right now?
The thing is, IceCube is tuned for a certain energy range. And while we've had very interesting results in that energy range, we would have to wait for like a century or so to like see the universe at the highest energies with our current detector. So to be able to like sort of really understand what the universe is like at those high energies, we do need to expand and like be a different detector. Another huge effect is just resolution. Like it's like a blurry image becoming clearer. So sort of we have a fair idea of some like sources of neutrinos, but with like a future version of IceCube, we would be able to better resolve where exactly in the sky neutrinos are coming from.
All right, well, let's stay on that for a second, because neutrinos can come from some of the most extreme places in the universe, if I'm thinking about this correctly. What kind of cosmic events are we talking about?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question. And the answer is, to some extent, it depends on what energy range you're looking at. So in fact, we had neutrinos from very soon after the Big Bang, which permeate pretty much the entire universe. But those aren't what IceCube focuses on, and those are very low energy. We have neutrinos from supernovas. Those occur in the mega electron volt range. That's again, we are sensitive to that, but it isn't what our detector does best. What our detector does best is look for neutrinos from the cores of galaxies. These are called active galactic nuclei. They're usually supermassive black holes, and they are, you could think of them as cosmic scale particle accelerators. And it is theorized, we don't know for sure, but it is theorized that a lot of the neutrinos we see could originate from those. So in fact, because we don't have like a perfect understanding of the sources of neutrinos. That's why we do the work we do.
Right. Maybe to add to that, I mean, IceCube, when we built the detector and the construction basically started in 2004 of the original detector, we had not really observed neutrinos from beyond the solar system at high energies. There was one event, as Bernard mentioned, a supernova that was observed by the Kamiokande detector on IMB back in 1987, which is sort of the beginning of observing neutrinos from beyond the solar system. But until very recently, we have not really observed any energetic neutrinos from the universe. And so what IceCube is doing is really exploring the universe in a fundamentally new way, at a fundamentally new energy scale. And basically, we're looking at these TeV neutrinos. A TeV is roughly the energy that a flying mosquito carries, but of course the mosquito has like billions and billions of atoms, and this energy is really confined in a single particle. So this is actually something that's very energetic. The largest colliders on Earth, like LHC, they reach roughly these energy scales, and these are for protons. And so it's really something fundamentally new, and we have seen first glimpses of kind of neutrinos coming from astrophysical sources, and we have some evidence that they are coming from these supermassive black holes at center of large galaxies. And also we have seen some neutrinos coming from our Milky Way, and also like a steady neutrino stream from another, like a Seyfert galaxy, which is a galaxy that has also a massive black hole in its center. But beyond that, we have not really found the sources of the astrophysical neutrinos that we are seeing. So it's really a field that is at the very beginning, and we really have just a handful of sources. So it's just an extremely exciting time that we have now this capability to look at the universe in these fundamentally new ways.
So our listeners are pretty used to hearing us talk about the James Webb Space Telescope, which helps us see these things. And if I'm understanding your work, you're actually helping us feel the impact of these neutrinos. Can you explain to me, though, when we talk about the neutrinos from this part of the galaxy or that part of the Milky Way, are they coming to us with a zip code? How do we know where they're originating from?
Right. Yeah, that is an excellent question, because when we observe a neutrino, since it's a fundamental particle, I mean, each neutrinos are basically identical, so we don't really know where it is coming from. When we observe a neutrino, we can kind of point back the direction where it came from. But then really, in order to associate it with a source or so, we have to look for some clustering of neutrinos, or we need to look for some coincident event, like a neutrino emitted together with some gamma ray or some other radiation. And as you mentioned, if your listeners think about kind of a typical telescope where you see these pretty pictures, the pictures that we produce are much more blurry, so we don't really see the extent of the sources. But by detecting the neutrinos, it actually allows us to understand the fundamental particle processes that are going on there. So, for example, what is the nature of the fundamental process that is happening in jets, for example, at supermassive black holes, or what is happening at the center of the sun, for example. So this is also where neutrinos actually help us understand kind of what is the fusion process that's going on there.
Very cool. Vedant, Historically, basic research like this, it can lead to unprecedented breakthroughs. What do you think the potential is here?
That's a very interesting question. One of the things like we're dealing with, as Carsten said, is that this is a field sort of in its infancy. We're still learning a lot. Quite simply, like we've made a lot of technological advances in like with optical instrumentation. We've understood a lot about fundamental physics as well, which feeds into like a broader view of the universe, right? So this is like one puzzle piece, but it helps elucidate a bigger picture. So yeah, I think a lot of like we don't really, it's not like we're sort of targeted towards like, okay, this is one specific goal, like fusion or whatever, like thing. It's not really like that, but the things we learn along the way, like sort of have offshoots, which are very interesting. Like a lot of the simulation work we do has like payoffs in high performance computing applications, for example. So yeah, it's still sort of, we're still mapping the field.
So I guess we're entering a new era of multi-messenger astronomy. Where are neutrinos playing a part in all of this?
I think neutrinos play a very like fundamental part because they sort of give you a window into the universe which nothing else can penetrate. Like at the highest energies, at the longest distances, the universe is opaque to light. Or even if there's just like a lot of cosmic dust and stuff in the way, only neutrinos can penetrate that. So it's all like sort of part of a bigger picture, because while neutrinos, like we can see the furthest reaches of the universe with neutrinos, as Carsten mentioned, like the picture we get is a lot fuzzier. So we need to sort of overlay all the maps together. And then we sort of, that tells us like, okay, we're seeing neutrinos from this part of the sky. Maybe we're not seeing high energy gamma rays, but we're seeing lower energy gamma rays. And that tells us something about like, okay, so this is what the source could have been like, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense, but I think it makes perfect sense. I guess the thing I'm still struggling with is just these neutrinos passing through us. And, you know, of course, we all think of radiation, but I guess neutrinos are harmless to us?
Yes, I mean, neutrinos are, yes, they are completely harmless to us. I mean, there's, as I mentioned, billions of neutrinos pass through you every second, and maybe once in a while one interacts, but it's basically just a tiny amount of energy that is being deposited. So it's totally harmless, and it's happening naturally and has been happening like that for billions of years.
All right, good to know. Listen, I could talk about neutrinos for another hour. This is absolutely fascinating. Your research is absolutely fascinating. But I'm going to ask each one of you to wrap up this interview by asking if our listeners remember just one thing about neutrinos or the ice cube, what do you think it should be? Carsten, we'll start with you.
Okay, yeah. I think listeners should remember that neutrinos are subatomic particles that pass through us all the time, and they allow us to look at the inner sides of the sun or stars or massive objects in the universe, and they allow us to study the universe in fundamentally new ways.
Vedant,
what do you think? I'd like to echo that theme. Like, I think fundamentally the takeaway should be that the universe is sending these ghost messengers out to us. And like to study them, we have to go all the way to the South Pole in one of the most cutting edge facilities in the world. And that is like a sort of way to get like a whole new window into our universe.
Well, Vedant Bosu and Carsten Roth, I would like to thank both of you very much for being our guests today on Cool Science Radio. This has been fascinating.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. Thanks for having us. And yeah. It was great to be on the show.